predictions. So yes, this episode, we're going to go 30 minutes or so on predictions for 2024. But because we are two lazy motherfuckers, we are not going to just, you know, make up our own. We're going to jam on predictions that we received recently that we thought were pretty good. And we'll talk about those, maybe extend on a few of them, on what we think. And yeah, go from there. So we received the prediction 2024 from the newsletter, The Marketing Millennials, which are, as many of you listeners probably know, very well-known, respected everything, podcast, newsletter. They do incredible memes on social media, like on all platforms. I think they're huge on LinkedIn too. The actual page of Marketing Millennials is really, really big. And I can't remember when it was, but I did come on the Marketing Millennials podcast earlier this year before we started this podcast with Daniel Murray, that's his name, running this this community.
And you've been on content. Every podcast.
I've been around the block. But yeah, so shout out Daniel Murray if you listen to this. And we should try and get it on this pod as well. And you know, cross the frontiers of US, UK, because it's US led, even mm-hmm. though they're so big now, it doesn't really matter.
And me and you
anymore.
Are just about still in the bracket of millennials, so it's cool.
yeah. So yeah, let's get to it. Do you want to add something to this intro?
No. I think it was good. It was a great email, and I think there's lots to talk about, Cesco.
All right. Let's get to it. First prediction. I don't know why I put a nest to everything when I speak in English. That's okay. Events will be bigger than AI. And they expand on the point a little bit, but I think I'll make an even bigger point. I think not just events, but anything more personal than something that an AI can do will be bigger than AI in 2024 for brands. The fact that everything and anything, especially on the generative AI side of things, can be automated now will mean that a lot of that type of content will be kind of bland or not very original. So anything that you can make that is going to be crafted by a human being and like very unique in a way, is going to be a strength. That's a strong one. Doesn't mean AI is not going to be important in 2024, but I think things that are more personalized will be even more important. That's the point.
Definitely. Lots of the common discussion points on this podcast have been that it's kind of like old school tactics coming back in. So when we're thinking about, there's like the rise of direct mail the last couple of years. So people are getting back on, you know, a few years ago, it's like direct mail is like a dirty word. Like no one sends direct mail anymore. But now all your feeds are being spammed. You're seeing ads everywhere. When you get something dropped through your letterbox, it's pretty exciting. And now with the technology that can actually make that kind of, old school tech more powerful, like QR codes and, you know, you can like scan shit and get like AR popping out of it. That kind of stuff's definitely making a comeback. And I read a study that said that millennials actually prefer direct mail because they feel like it's more impactful, because they like the feeling of when something comes through the letterbox. Exactly to your point, that when you have something personal that's like made by somebody in your hands, it's like a tangible thing. So yeah, I'm definitely on board with that. And I think AI is great. People probably maybe listen to this thinking that we were going to say that the trend for 2024 is AI, which I think a lot of people are probably going to say. I think maybe the trend for 2023 was the kicking off of AI, but I think it's going to still be a little while longer before it kind of really takes off a lot more. So yeah, I agree. I think in person, everything in person, I'm definitely up for that. And it'd be great to do some podcasts in person next year. Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah. Got plans for that, but yeah, experiences, micro experiences. Think about community as well, how you get people engaged with each other, like all these type of topics are going to be even more important to stand out in a crowd. Oh, I've seen this this video from this this guy in French in France, who's talking about this startup in the US called Dirty Lemon, I think it's called, who came from nowhere, and they, I think in the last couple of years, like, don't quote me on the timelines, but they went from zero to $12 million in revenue just by doing door-to-door marketing.
There you go.
And so I think it's a good example for this point. What they were doing is they were a bit controversial. They were recruiting ladies to go do door-to-door, and they with cans, and they were saying to the people inside the door, hello, my name is so and so, and I represent this brand. I'd love for you to try it. It's for free, so grab a can. And then as they were about to leave, they would turn around and say, if you want to let me know if you like it, just, do you want to take my number? Obviously, big amount of yeses on this question. They would get the number, and then they would add this number a few weeks later, be like, oh, it's me again, by text. It's me again. Would you like some more? Did you like it? Would you like some more? And if you do, I'll come back to your house to deliver it. And basically, door-to-door combined with SMS marketing. So then they add all these people's number into automation flows to get them to sign up for a subscription to get these cans every month off the back of ladies doing door-to-doors.
Man, men are so basic.
Yeah, so basic. But I'm not surprised it worked.
Depressing.
I'm not surprised it worked. It's crazy that you could go from zero to millions in revenue by just doing this one strategy very, very well. It is, there's a lot of, like, there's a lot to unpick in that strategy, like why it worked, but you can imagine that,
yeah,
that
it worked. It's interesting. And also that kind of crosses over into the realm of growth strategies that are more time consuming, and things that the things that your mind doesn't necessarily immediately jump to, like, classic Airbnb example, they signed up their first 100 hosts by just knocking doors in New York. So it's like that in-person element, which, you know, a lot of agencies might be like, oh, we're not going to do that, and we're not going to do this for our client because it involves like going out of the office and doing stuff. But, you know, if you work with the right agency, then they will definitely cover those things. But if you do it internally, then you need to get out into the real world and do stuff. So it makes sense.
Exactly. So this type of thinking, like, good luck doing that with AI. You can't. Like, it's really, like, it's original. It's crafted for the brand. There's a little psychology there, like basic psychology, like men wanting to get a number from someone cute delivering cans. And you getting one for free to get the taste, but you give your number. Then you into an SMS marketing campaign. Then you become a subscriber, like, and you give away $20 a month or £20 a month, whatever it is. So anyone selling cans or products listening to this, like, that's one to, for up for grabs, because I don't think anyone's doing that in the UK. Go for it. So that's that was it. Prediction one.
Very nice. Okay. Prediction two that resonates with us.
Yeah. Go for
and it.
It
is becoming a media company or a media kind of arm of a company. Because the point around that is, historically, you're a brand and you work with, say, a creative agency or influencers or content creators to create content on behalf of your brand. And with the rise of how easy it is, you know, case in point with us, right, to start a podcast, technology accessible to everyone, the content, the quality of being able to film just on your iPhone, you know, we're filming with our iPhone right now. Not the best quality in the world, but definitely good enough. There isn't really an excuse for your brand to not be creating that content itself. You know, it needs to be creating content and putting it out into the world. You need to be putting stuff on socials every day. You need to have a content strategy. You need to have all of this stuff. So it just makes sense that you either create that functionality in-house or you hire people in that have that experience to do that to create your media arm for your company.
Yeah. I still think there is a way to do that only solely with external creators. Like, I do feel like there is a way to get like five young folk to create content every day and you pay them a certain amount, like something that's not going to break the bank, and you get literally 5 to 10 piece of content going out every day, like constantly, even on weekends. Something that is really hard to do if you have like one social media manager in house, like it's going to be really hard to ask that person to do that kind of volume. I think this point, like every company becoming a media company is hard to execute if you have a very small team. Like it does, you will need some external support somehow. And in most cases, at least for me, what I think is creators, micro influencers, they're not really influencers, they're just content creators, to help you do that is definitely one of the ways I would go for. And I think thinking
well, I mean,
about
that could go for the, you know, that could be a trend, right? It might be that we see smaller companies pop up that are solely based around, like, that maybe the typical agency model, but they're based around being your hired in media company,
media.
It's like you're not just working on like a brief or a retainer basis to create campaign content. It's they'll work with you to come up with what your programming is, build it for you, and help you distribute it.
Things like developing a newsletter, a podcast, a YouTube channel with content series based on like things that are around your product, what you're trying to sell, but not about the selling. That's really important. When you become a media company, you need to talk about topics that are around what you're trying to sell. And it makes a nice, it's a nice segue into then people saying, oh, they do sell this thing as well, which is useful for that topic that they mention every day or every week. So I'm going to check them out. It's about staying top of mind, being entertaining or educational or both. And being out there, just giving value to people, a lot of value.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think that's, you want to kind of own as much of the equity as you can. So, you know, to your point about doing it with 4 or 5 external creators, I think that's definitely a possibility. But I think you also, if you have someone who's going to effectively be the face of your brand, you kind of want that person to be embedded completely in your company. You know, you want them to be in the weeds every day so that when, you know, to your last point, when you need to talk about things that are around your brand, they know what that is. You haven't got the agency just coming to you saying, oh, you know, we want to do this about some other thing that's come up in the news. Can you tell us what your take is on it?
Yeah.
It being internal means that you have that internal take and you are embedded into that on a daily.
True. To give you an example of a company that is doing a lot of media or working like a media company is, you know, this kind of like blood monitoring company, Zoe. You heard of them?
Yes.
Patch thing. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, Zoe has one of the top 10 podcasts in the UK, like overall, every category. So they are up there with, you know, Stephen Bartlett and all the, you know, comedy type of podcasts, like the biggest ones, the ones that get hundreds of thousands of listens at every episode, literally millions of plays every month, or at least every few months. That is a business that has a podcast that is that big because they talk about nutrition and well-being and, you know, all these kind of, you can imagine all these kind of topics, and and they've done it. It's an incredible asset once you get to that level. And that's also why it's a take. Why is it a take for 2024? It's because once you do that, it's the biggest, probably one of the most solid moat you can create for your business. It's not replicable. It will be unique to you, to your DNA, to your style, to whoever is the face or the voice. It's not like a feature, you know, you can't copy that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's why we're starting to see the rise of the, I don't want to say influencer CEO, but the CEO with an audience, you know, the CEO who understands the importance of building their personal audience so that when they're ready to do so, they can distribute their business or their product or their company through that audience, right? And I think that's going to be exactly the same as, it's the same as a media company, right? You don't have to be a media company of a business. It can be your own personal media company, or if, especially if you're like a solopreneur, it's you are the media company.
It's funny, the amount of people starting a business today, and when they talk about, I don't know, starting to post on LinkedIn, they're like, oh, but I don't know what I would say, you know, to do one post a week. And it's like, you need to post every day. Like, so you need to know why you're doing it, because I guess, like to your point, if the founder's doing it, it's a massive weapon, building an audience around your name. And there's more and more examples of this, but I think in 2024 and beyond, there's going to be way more founders, CEOs being the face of the, or the engine of that that media company within the business. And how, like, I'm so happy with this trend happening, because how easy, I guess it would be easy, but I think I've got some insights already in this kind of world. But I think how easy it would be for a CMO or head of growth to talk about marketing if the CEO or himself or herself is the engine of that content that you're pushing out. I think the dialogue between what is marketing and media and the ROI of that, the ROI of content, is going to be a much more healthier discussion if your boss is the one behind in front of the camera.
Definitely. I think what's going to be really interesting to see is, it makes sense that soon we're going to find a company where the CEO and COO, or the two founders, are the CMO and the CEO, and they have a media business between them. You know, so let's say it was us. You've got your CEO who is the face of the company, and you've got your CMO who's interacting with them, and you're talking about marketing, you're talking about the business, you're splicing those two things together. And I think that's like a super powerful combination, where you've got the appreciation of the need for marketing, you've got the appreciation of the need for building a brand and a business all in one package. So I feel like soon we're going to see that come to fruition.
Yeah. And I think, so based on everything we just said, I'll make an extended prediction into the bigger and bigger importance of understanding distribution of that content, which is slightly different from ads. And we spoke about this in many episodes already in a podcast, one of them being the one with Cody Schneider quite a few episodes ago. But understanding how channels work and how channels work with each other to boost or just give the maximum impact of that content online is going to be way more important. And I'm not just talking about ads. Like, it's not just pure ads, it's also just organically understanding the intricacies of and testing as much as you can, what's going to make something go a little bit further. I don't want to say viral, because I don't want to abuse the word, but get more impressions, more reach for that piece of content. There's a lot of tactics out there, and it's constantly evolving. So I think if you think about it in the sense of your current head of growth type of role, or profile, I think that is going to become a bigger piece of that role, understanding the organic distribution of that content as you're becoming a media company.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think with the, we spoke of this as well previously, when Web3 came to its like apex a couple of years ago, there was, people realized that, okay, now we need, then the most important person in this company is a social media manager. And for the years kind of before that, it was like trending downwards in terms of the least important person, that, or the feeling, I'm not saying I agree with this, but the feeling in a, yeah, in a business was the social media manager is just like an intern these days because of the decrease in organic reach and all that. But then when Web3 came around and it was all about growing organically through Twitter or, you know, through Discord, whatever, and people understood the need for someone who understands community, then that kind of flipped that round entirely. Yeah. And I think that is now stayed the same. When we get to the point where brands are building media companies, they need someone who knows how to distribute that media organically without just putting some spend behind it.
Exactly. Good one. All right. Trend for 2024, number three. The evolution of what influencers or influencer marketing is. All of these points are kind of linked with each other, which is kind of interesting. Like it's like a little jigsaw that you put together. But I think we're gonna, I agree with this one. So the point is, let me make the point and then we can talk about it. The point is that we're gonna move away, more and more away, from one-off big influencers kind of activations, because they don't resonate with people. They're not as impactful as, you know, I guess like more long-term relationship with meaningful influencers with actual influence in the, mm-hmm. in the field that you're trying to, or the business you're trying to grow. I agree with this one. I think we are already in the transition phase with this, but I think having a deeper relationship with the influencer we work with, probably go a little bit more micro, as opposed to going for the big stars that anyway 99% of the brands can't afford anyway, but mm-hmm. instead of going for the shiny numbers in followers and hoping that you're gonna, you know, make a splash, you can divide that budget in 10, 20, 30x if you, depending on how big it is to begin with, and go for more meaningful long-term relationship with influencers. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think you could probably go back the last 5 years and find the coming year trend report, and someone's going to be saying this is the next year is the year where influencers not die. I'm not saying they need to die, but when people move away from getting the, you know, the girl who's just come off Love Island to talk about this thing, she doesn't even know what it is. Yeah. And we spoke to Ash a few episodes back on a podcast, and from his perspective as a creator, it was that he prefers now working with a brand on a longer term engagement. Obviously, it's better financially, but also it just means they can put out content that makes sense and lives for a longer period of time, or for a series, rather than just one post and you forget about it. I think people are becoming more aware of, you know, when something just pops up on a feed and it's just a product placement and the person doesn't know what it is. I think that the way the industry needs to move forward, and what this trend is saying, is that when you work with someone as a partner, prefer that word to influencer, they should have a need for your product, which is where it all started, right? And if you if you stay in the creator community, you go on YouTube and someone that's like filming high quality content will be working with Nikon, Canon, whoever, because they have a need for that content. And I think that is the way people need to focus on influencers, rather than who's got the biggest reach, pay them whatever they want, just get one post in the feed and that's going to come back to me and pay dividends. I just don't think that's the case anymore. You need to find someone who is active in your niche, has a use for your product and can talk about it, right? You want someone to be talking about your brand. You want someone to be reviewing it and they know what they're talking about and eventually end up using it, ideally. You don't want someone who's just like, oh, I just had my first one of these booties today and I feel really great. And then they turn the camera off and they throw it in the bin. You never see it again. So I hope we see this trend kick off, because I think it really needs to be, it needs to happen.
Yeah. And I think it does happen more and more, but yeah, it's definitely still, there's margins. It can be much bigger than that.
There's one that's quite interesting, is we've been watching, I'm just sad to admit this, but I'm going to own it. We've been watching the most recent episode of Kardashians.
That's great. And I watch it too.
It's good. I mean, every episode I end up just getting annoyed at it. But anyway, but Khloe has launched her brand Good American, which is like a kind of fashion brand, high street fashion brand. And I was reading an interesting article the other day about the girl who's actually behind a lot of those brands. So yeah, it was basically Good American was like the brainchild of Emma Greed, and who's a British lady. I think she's about 34. And off the top of my head, I believe the story was she like pitched Kris Jenner on this concept of like building brands around the Kardashians. And then that's how she got her way in. And now she's launched multiple brands kind of fronted by the Kardashians, but really she's kind of my take is that she's like the brains behind it, and she's now worth half a bill off the back of doing that. So there is definitely money to be made in finding the right person to be the figurehead of your brand who already has an audience, and then position them as your CEO. But everything is running the background. I think that can obviously work. And that product, you know, both Good American and Skims obviously has direct appeal to people who follow those two. Yeah. So I think that is still an interesting play.
That is like a combination of like the point we made earlier, which is the founder CEO being the face of the company, right? I think for for the biggest celebrities in the world, so the Kardashians and the biggest actors, etc., like they're in a category of their own, and what they started to do now is they launch their own business. They don't promote other businesses as influencers. They create their own line of products. They pump out the content themselves because they've got the biggest reach of the world on every channel, and they make all the profit. Well, I guess they make a lot more of the profit because they, you know, even if they don't own 100% of it, the margins are much better than just being paid on one post.
Yeah.
So you can see, the combination of like what we're saying now, which is big influencers are not going to do one-off. They're not also themselves not going to do it because they have their own product now, the Skims and the Good American, and one I really like that is a bit more under the radar, like the Pharrell Williams like men's skincare product called Human Race, I think. I received all day. I didn't buy it yet, but I'm on the list. Get the emails and stuff. But I saw like that's him, you know, like he's the face. Like in every email, you see like Pharrell, a new photo shoot with his face and stuff. Like it's really cool, you know. If you like the guy, you're a lot more likely to buy. So I think those two trends combined work really really well with each other.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, next trend, next prediction from the Marketing Millennials list. Again, we couldn't just make up our own, so we're just riffing off theirs because it's really good. Number four is the rise of goodwill marketing. Which means basically doing something without, like the surprise and delight kind of thing, you know, like doing something for someone, for one of a customer, either reacting to something that happened in the world or just randomly doing an act of kindness. Actually, it doesn't even have to be your customer. It could be someone that something happened to someone and you just... you know, you're just coming to the rescue. But there's been a couple of examples recently of exactly that. One was from the kind of, you know, what do you call it? Like goods, drinking cups and goods called Stanley.
Oh, yeah.
How do you call that category? I've got a bank now.
Like a... like a fucking like the opposite of a single use cup, it's like a multi use cup, isn't it?
Yeah, like multi use, like
it is stainless steel flask, yeah, just
right.
Yeah.
Stanley, the stainless steel flask manufacturer, they do other things, but we'll just cut the bit before, I think there was this video that went viral where someone had their car burned. to the ground, like completely done. And that person, after the fire is out and the car cools down, like opens the door, and in the middle, in the cup holder, there's this Stanley cup is still there, and she opens it, and it's still liquid with ice cubes in there and stuff. Like the thing didn't move at all. So that already went viral. And then what they did is the CEO of Stanley doubled down, did a video where they stitched the on TikTok, they stitched the video from the girl, and then he starts talking after a few seconds, and they offer to pay for a car, pay for a new car, and obviously that went double viral. So the first video went crazy because people are like, "What the fuck? Like that thing is indestructible," and then the CEO comes in and be like, "We'll pay you for your car." Like that's amazing. You get everything you can think of, like organic reach, all the PR you want. It's great. And to be able to do that, obviously, you need to be ultra aware of what's happening in the world and being reactive to things. You need to be listening on these platforms, on social platforms. If you're not doing that, you're gonna miss potentially a moment for your brand. But that's where that goodwill marketing comes from. There was another example. What was the other one? The North Face jacket. Did you see that one?
No.
So there was this video, I think it was last week, it's very recent, this video of this girl, she's in, I think, Scotland or somewhere.
Oh, I have, and she's
and it's pouring down, and she has like an old North Face jacket that is actually not waterproof, or it's not as waterproof as she imagined. So she's like struggling in the pouring down rain. And then I don't know what's the timelines with that, but like obviously the video came out, and then they North Face did a reaction video where they took one of their latest jacket, which is 100% waterproof, and they flew an helicopter to where she was, and I think they delivered the jacket to her, obviously with some sort of delay. Like they probably like they made up the reaction video, but that that also went viral off the back. The first video went viral. The goodwill marketing campaign went viral, and everyone's happy. But yeah
it's very cool. Similar
to this.
Yeah, I think you have to be a brand that is like willing to, because a lot of the time it's like, what do I do with the negative posts, or what do I do with the negative reviews? And it's like, ignore them or block them or get rid of them. Just don't reply to them. But I think you have to be a brand which is like, you're happy to acknowledge that someone's had a bad experience. And like the Stanley one, less so, right? Because that's obviously a great experience. I mean, it's not great having your car burnt down, but it's a great experience with your brand. But with the North Face one, they could have said, like, just move on, right? It'll be dead in a few weeks. But it's like, acknowledge that you fucked up, and then own it. And then it turns into something even better for you. And I think it's great. I think there's probably, you can go too far the other way. Like, we've all seen the YouTube videos where, you know, it's like giving a homeless guy $1,000 or something. And it kind of gets into like that whole kind of like savior space. And it's a bit like holier than thou, like look how good I am giving people money for something. But I think if it completely makes sense, like both of those two examples, great. I think it'll be awesome if we could see more of that. I just think in general, brands need to lean into like, Ryanair been doing it for years, right, on organic social, not necessarily making it good for the customer
in a good way,
owning the fact that people have a shit experience but they're still going to use your brand. And you know, it's cool. I think it's very cool.
I think if it's very relevant to your brand, even if it's not a customer but someone has a struggle, and you can tap into that very quickly with a solution that is not tacky or savior, white savior behavior type thing, then go for it. But it's really hard to predict. Like, we're not going to be able to say in this podcast, these are the exact steps, you know, like it's really like you have to be listening and you have to like be smart about it. And the planets kind of have to align. But I think there's a lot more opportunities than for that to happen that we see today. So I guess that's where the prediction comes from.
I mean, with the sheer output of content on social, every single year getting more and more and more and more and more, then it comes back again, right? All of, like we said, all of these things are connected. It comes back again to the importance of someone who is in the culture, right? They're like active on TikTok themselves. Maybe they're a social media exec. That can be the most important person in your company, because if that's the person who found that video, and they can connect those two things together, and that is a massive moment for you as a brand. That is massively empowering to somebody who 5 years ago was just like the social media exec that didn't do anything. Didn't do anything that nobody cared about. It's interesting. That's the importance of keeping the young people around, right? It's no point having a brand where everyone's just a load of suits in an office talking about this thing called TikTok and no one knows what it is. Mm. You need people in your business in like solid roles that are in this shit. They can talk about it, they can come to a board meeting and they can put the case across as to like why you need to be there and why you need to be monitoring and listening.
Good one. All right, moving on to the last one, which is one of our favorites and definitely something we are working on, the rise of personal branding, and not necessarily just for the individual itself, but how can a business utilize that for growth and for more attention online. I think the best example of that still today is LinkedIn. There's so many people still on LinkedIn that are only using LinkedIn for job searches. Still, in proportion, very few people actually putting content out there to raise awareness about what they do or who they work for. And there's a ton of organic attention, organic reach to get from a platform like LinkedIn. And I think, well, for example, I think you guys are doing some interesting things on that space in at your workplace to incentivize people to post more. Maybe, I don't know if you want to talk about that, but...
So we decided this year, or last month actually, that Hex needed to have more of a voice and talk about our expertise and get it out there on LinkedIn. So now we post content from all of the departments every single day. It's obviously great for inbound. It just presents us as experts in the market. It's kind of double the work for me because I also try and post daily on my personal LinkedIn as well. but that is all connected, right? Because I don't think you should feel guilty if you are posting content on LinkedIn to build your personal brand if you have a business and you're not a freelancer or a consultant, because that is just showing that you're an expert. And when people want to work with you, they're like, oh, I have to work with him at Hex, or in my case. And it just all flows back down. It's like SEO, right? When we talk about the, you're connected to pages that have, you know, better score than you, and that score flows back to you and that builds your score. It's like, you're, as a company, all of your employees are experts in their field. That's why you've hired them. And if on LinkedIn, you're just posting every day, right? You can get 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 reach organically a week. And it's like, it's mad. You're paying for that probably in ads. So why don't you just get your 10, 20, 30 members of staff to be doing that? It's a no-brainer, but still very few people do it. I think it's like less than 1% of people on LinkedIn actually post content, which is great for those of us that do post content.
I mean, exactly. Well, I think we're far away from saturation. There's obviously some people who are posting stuff that can be a bit annoying for other people. Not to us. Like, I appreciate the grind, but you know, like sometimes people go too far in, you know, either being too in depth for a topic or sharing too much of their personal life. So like, there's always. Yeah, you need to test with those things. Like, there's always a middle ground. Like, not everything that you post is gonna work. It's not always the thing that you think is gonna work that's gonna work. The number one thing you can control is the consistency and just putting out the content, just so you learn. And I think it's definitely not something that is only important for people who work for themselves, like freelancers, consultants, advisors, like whatever. It's also important for if you're an employee somewhere, like showing that, like if you could post every day about something that's happening with your business, And how it reflects to you and your role, or you and your career, where you are in your journey. You could just be starting and still sharing that. I think there's a ton of untapped attention there that could be captured. And at the same time, on the topic of LinkedIn, they're far from losing momentum in terms of growth. That platform is still gaining users every day, every week, every month. So it's not like it's saturated and we're just filling in the same bucket. The bucket is growing as well at the same time. So definitely a trend there with more personal branding related to the business you work for yourself, and also related to that, how your business can either incentivize or make sure that more and more employees actually use it for the business benefits, but also for their own benefits, for their own career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an important thing, an important principle of management, in my opinion. How I manage a team is that I don't expect that those people are going to work for me or at the same business that I'm working at for the rest of their career. The same as I'm not going to work at the same business for the rest of my career, and you're not, and everyone listening to this isn't going to. I think if you can be realistic, and it is a hard ask for your employees to say you need to put out content, but just own it and just say, look guys, in a year's time, 2 years' time, whenever's right for you and it makes sense that you're going to move on, if you're posting daily content or even weekly content on LinkedIn, you apply for a job and that you're up against 30 other people, 29 of those other people most likely aren't posting content on LinkedIn. So when that recruiter is looking, not recruiter, but like HR person, whoever, hiring manager, is looking at your profile, you stand out because they're like, this guy is an expert. These people might be an expert, but I'm going to have to take them to an interview and ask them all these questions to find out.
Mm.
And just own it and tell your staff that. And I think people respect that.
Yeah. I think you make a good point there. I think I do think there's some other factors to this, but in my own personal experience, since I started posting on LinkedIn a few years ago, not to the frequencies of today, because today I'm trying to do it every day, but I haven't proactively looked for a job myself. The opportunities came to me off the back of just being more visible. Mm-hmm. If you're, like you said, if you're standing out in a sea of people similar to you, but you're one of the few that is not afraid to just, you know, make a point, whatever, you just share your experience, you'll make it a lot easier for people to find you in whatever form, shape or form. The other way we're doing that right now with the podcast, and the podcast transforms into content on LinkedIn and social, and on we put it on YouTube for those
makes life a lot easier when you can just take a clip.
Exactly. It's like, where do you get the content from? Well, if we talk on a mic for, you know, an hour, half an hour every week, that's the content is there for us to pick from. But it's part of the same thing. And it's funny, the more I think about this five trends, there are 5/6 trends that we spoke about, and the fact that they're all kind of embedded within each other, you could tie them all up with what we're doing right now, is building a media company. We're the face of the podcast. We're no company yet, but we could be in the future if things go well after a few. I'm going to be generous with ourselves, like a few years, maybe 2-3 years. The content will be there, driven by us. We'll probably go through, micro events on some sort of community eventually. There's more like fully formed. Almost all of the points that we mentioned are like embedded into like that thing that we're doing right now, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Right, that's a wrap. Prediction 2024. We didn't want. I saw some lists where there was like 50 of them, and I'm like, "Fuck this! It's too many predictions." And I'm like, "How can you even retell?" I was reading there, and I was like, after 15, I was like, "I can't remember number one, number two. There's too many." But I like the concise,
conciseness
of the marketing millennials list. Only five. It was good to jam on them. Let us know what you think when you listen to the episode. You can react to the episode on Spotify. You can reply to the newsletter. If you haven't checked out our website, we've got ingrowthwetrust.club as the website to check out the episodes, and we'll put more and more of the articles, like past episodes, in written forms in it as well for those who prefer to read.
SEO.
And SEO, obviously, SEO. And so, yeah.
Let us know your trends. Let us know something we missed. And I think one trend, our own trend that we can add to this list that we'll both agree on that we haven't spoken about, is that next year there'll be something that no one considered this year that comes out of nowhere. The same way as this year we had ChatGPT. Next year we'll be sitting here talking about some crazy shit that happened in 2024 that nobody predicted. So that's one thing that we know is going to be a trend for sure.
I agree.
Maybe it'll be ID.
Yeah. I don't know. Something, yeah. Yeah, something we haven't discussed. It's definitely not going to be those Ray-Bans VR, AR, Meta glasses. That's not a trend.
No.
Maybe we could do an episode on that before the end of the year. Like, if it's like yes or kill, you know, like, and we can go through like a long list of things that we think are not gonna survive.
Yeah, that's cool. Anyway. I know at the start of this we said we would never do a quick fire questions, but maybe we need to end the year with asking each other 20 quick fire questions.
Yeah, could do that.
Over a nice whiskey.
All right, man, that was a good one. Have a good rest of the day.
That's the wrap.
See ya.